Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's come aboard.
We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. On a Trash Tuesday, send us your trashes by tweeting at me, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. I'll read through those trashes this hour here on the DA show. Also, coming up in 20 minutes, the athletic director of formerly Division III St. Thomas in Minnesota. The Tommies are a Division III college football powerhouse, so dominant that their conference actually kicked them out, citing economic, or I should say, competitive disadvantage, uneven playing field. So the Tommies needed a new home. St. Thomas becomes the first ever university to go from Division III to Division I in one off season. That's the entertainer that you just heard. If you're going to cough and clear your throat, can you at least do it with the microphone off?
I thought I was down. I don't have the ability to turn it off.
What was that, Pete?
I told him he was on.
All right. Okay. My apologies. We'll move on.
Yeah. Okay. So, St. Thomas's AD, Phil Esten, is going to join us coming up here in about 20 minutes from now to talk about this remarkable historic jump from Division III to Division I. So, again, send us your tweets, and we'll get to those coming up here on the show. Also on the phones at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. So this story that I had last hour that I wanted to get to, how about this? Rookie Daniel Gafford of the Chicago Bulls is a second-round draft pick, okay? Now, we know that young athletes being on Twitch has not exactly been the safest mode of communication. Blake Snell, the Rays pitcher, was on Twitch, which is a platform where events are live streamed, essentially. In fact, you may be watching the DA show on Twitch coming sooner rather than later. But a lot of times it's used as a platform for people to play video games and have other people watch said person play video games. Or you're playing video games against other people, having conversations with other people, and that's also broadcast and then recorded. So Blake Snell's comments about not wanting to come back to play baseball unless he was getting paid, it was too dangerous, all of that happened on Twitch, which could be seen as an interpersonal conversation that's not supposed to be broadcast live, but is broadcasted live, and then a lot of people pick it up and it could be recorded. Well, yesterday during a Twitch stream, Bulls rookie Daniel Gafford, who's a second-round pick, apparently took issue with his head coach, Jim Boylan. Quote, "I'm going to answer this question, but I'm not going to read it out. As a matter of fact, You know what? I will read it out.
Uh-oh.
Do you like Jim Boylan? Gafford's response was, I don't like him a lot, but he's okay. Got some things he could work on. Got some things he could be better at as a person and as a coach. I'm not going to hate on him, though. I'm not going to hate the man. Okay, this is an interesting quote from Gafford, because Jim Boylan, in his season plus in charge of the Bulls, is 39-84. And their season's over because they were not invited to the Disney World bubble for the seeding part of the season. So unless there is a second bubble that has all the really bad junky teams in it, you're not going to see the Chicago Bulls play. But who is more valuable to a franchise? Is it a first-round draft pick or a head coach? It's always the first-round draft pick. But what about a second-round draft pick? I mean, you've got a second-round pick saying that the head coach, but I don't like him a lot. He okay, but he's got some things he can work on. As a person, I'd like to know exactly what those things are, because if you're a second-round draft pick, more often than not, you are disposable. And for a franchise like the Bulls that are this bad, maybe you're getting set to give Boylan the old heave-ho anyway, or maybe you're trying to clean house so that you have a stronger locker room. Maybe you're trying to find guys that get along with your head coach. There's a lot of different ways you can go. But oftentimes, there's not a lot of security for a second-round draft pick, usually non-guaranteed contracts. So if I'm Gafford, I'm avoiding ripping my head coach. I'm glad he said he okay. I'm glad he said I'm not going to hate him. I'm not going to hate the man. That's good. But when you say I don't like him a lot and there's things he can be better at as a person, I wonder how that's going to be received inside Bulls way. Meantime, on to college football. There was an interview done with Bill Hancock, commissioner of the college football playoff. Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, wrote an interesting piece about how Bill Hancock views how this college football season may go. And instead of panicking, Bill Hancock, who is known as the most optimistic man in sports, said, quote, "When you're in the middle of a blizzard, you think it's going to snow forever. But it's not. August will get here." He's still optimistic that there is going to be a college football season. What is interesting is a lot of the what ifs. What if there is no conference championship games? What if we have regular seasons played, say 8 regular season games played for these conferences, no non-conference schedules, but no conference championship games? How do you know who to use as conference champions as a data point to go to the college football playoff? I mean, Bill Hancock is acting as though there's still going to be a college football playoff. He said the conference just says to the committee, "Here's our champion." So imagine this, that in the Big Ten, you have a team out of one side, a team out of the other side. Let's say it's Ohio State on one side, Wisconsin on the other side. They've got maybe the same regular season record. We're lining up for a potential Big Ten championship game, but the Big Ten title game is not played this year. Bill Hancock says Big Ten chooses its champion and gives it to us. Wow, that's kind of interesting, which, you know, works a lot of the time because the human eye, the commissioner, the conference powers that be, the coaches, would have this kind of discussion. Okay, who is the best team in this conference? We hand this over to the college football playoff committee. Also, what happens if there's players that have been removed from the season for a couple of weeks because of the coronavirus, and in those games, the team's lost? But those players are back for a potential playoff. Hancock says, "We'll only decide what happens on the field. If a player can't play due to the coronavirus, it's just going to be like that player is injured." If there isn't a full season for one conference, but there is for another conference. One conference ends up playing all eight of its games. One conference has six games, or one team plays eight games or 10 games, and one team plays six games or seven. What happens? Hancock says, we're just going to be able to assess it with the eyeball test. He says the committee can discern, hey, they're good. That's why we have a committee. If this were simply data-driven, I'd have my doubts. If this wasn't a human committee, I wouldn't be as confident as I am. Now, when you think about this, this is really interesting because for college football, for many years, specifically in the 90s and 2000s, computers were used to discern, to decide who the best teams are. It was not supposed to be up to human beings, too much human error. So the data from the machines and the computers were supposed to be the best way to decide who were the best teams in college football. And what Bill Hancock is saying now is because we're humans, because it's not computers, we're better suited this year than ever. And you know what? He's right. In a crazy twist of fate, college football could be saved this year because of the human being factor. Now, I don't know if we even get to college football playoff. I'd love to think it. I'd love to dream it. I'd love just to think that we're going to get a college football season, however that looks. I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of what ifs. There's a lot of questions because it's college and not the pros. Namely, there's no union. So you can't negotiate with a union what the safety protocols are going to be. You have so many different conferences. You don't have one uniform safety protocol. So you've got a lot of what ifs, a lot of this team can do this, this school can do this, this school can't do this. A lot of different financial components here, a lot of different budgets. If one school says we can test every day, one school says we can only test once a week, can you play games against one another? It's a lot of different potential pitfalls in trying to get a college football season done. But I hope that it can get done. I hope that it is done. And I hope that we get a college football playoff. But I love this idea that the greatest twist of fate, the greatest irony ever, that college football is saved this year because humans pick the best teams. And it's true. If you've got all of these different realities for all of these different schools, TCU is 6-0, but they've only played six games. Meantime, Penn State is 8-1. They played nine games. Meantime, we can't figure out who the SEC champ is, so the SEC has to give the committee who the champion is based on point differential, common opponent, something like that. These are the things that would take humans to say, okay, well, critical thinking would say this instead of this, this instead of this, this team instead of this team, instead of computers that wouldn't have that ability. Humans could be here to save the day. And speaking of college football, we'll talk to AD of St. Thomas, Phil Esten, who's jumping from D3 to D1, coming up here in just a couple of minutes. It's also a Trash Tuesday, and so let's do some trashes here. Alien OG tweets, I'm trashing my now ex-girlfriend. She lost her job back in April. She became crazy and raging, who liked to text her ex-boyfriend while I'm at work every day paying the bills. She makes AB look like JCDA. She gone, and my world is way better. Hashtag trash her.
Total wasteoid.
Wow. That's a lot of action. Rob tweets, what happens to no shirt, no service? I'm trashing the guy who insists on not wearing a shirt in the convenience store. Great, you've got six-pack abs. I don't. In an era where masks are mandatory, so are shirts, bud. Put your dating shirt on in public because nobody cares. Hashtag Chubbo Nation. Trash them.
Stinky debris.
Bravo.
Rob tweets, I'm trashing everybody on the DA show for putting the image of Mraz with no pants in my head. Trash us.
Let's face it. That's straight trash.
And I got an oopsie.
John tweets, "We're trashing people who park at handicapped spaces. They don't have a handicap sticker in the window. Come on. Trash them."
Are those maggots?
Ray tweets, "I'm trashing the three-headed boss at the local DPW I work with at North Tonawanda," that's in Western New York, "that have about two-fifths of a brain between the three of them, with only a quarter of that said brain outside of their ass. Hashtag get these fools a clue."
Charlie Sheen just dumped that on the set of Men at Work.
There's a lot of math there.
Yeah, that really was more math than I was accustomed to. Chuck tweets, "I'm trashing the Washington Football Club owner Dan Snyder daily until his wife files for divorce and hopefully tries to gain control of the team. Trash Dan Snyder."
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
Jeremy tweets, "I'm trashing an unnamed mask company ordered online on June the 30th of an in-stock item with 1 to 2 for shipping. Finally shipped 3 weeks after purchase. Then either the post office lost the package or the truck caught fire. Hashtag get everyone out."
Hold your nose. That's some smelly rubbish.
Okay, when we come back, this crazy college football dynamic of a D3 school going to D1 in one off season. Their AD is next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
You are a giant pile of trash.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's a Trash Tuesday here on the show, so send us your trashes by tweeting at me, DA on CBS. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit, car, motorcycle, and RV policies on top of what Geico could already save you? What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. Listen to us across the great CBS Sports Radio Network on our hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Also on Sirius XM channel 206, and stream us using the CBS Sports app. St. Thomas football has competed in Division III, and they are so dominant, their conference said, "You're too good for us." They have been 126-21 in the past 8 seasons. More than 100 games over 500 in the last 8 years, with a pair of NCAA championship appearances as well. And so that was Division III. They're heading to Division I, and they'll be playing football in the Pioneer League, D1. And so D3 to D1 has never been done in one fell swoop. Joining us here on the show is their athletic director leading the way on this, Phil Esten. Phil, good morning.
Good morning, DA. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for joining us.
Of course.
My first question is, when the conference said, "Hey, you guys can't be here anymore, you're too good," what was the school's reaction?
Well, you know, I started at St. Thomas about 18 months ago and walked into a conversation among presidents that was exactly that. You know, they were looking to level competitive parity. And along those conversations, ultimately decided that one way to do that was what I'll just call conference realignment, and we were realigned out. And so, you know, our reaction essentially was we need to hustle to find a place to go. We only had 2 years to find a conference. Certainly had a couple of really good options at the Division III level, possibly competing at the Division II level. But about 2 months into our assessment, we learned that there might be a path to move directly to Division I. And when you take a look at our institution, University of St. Thomas's profile, looks a lot like schools do at the Division I level, a lot like the schools do in the Pioneer Football League, schools like Butler and Drake and San Diego and Valparaiso and others and Dayton. So we decided to give it a try. You know, although it's not been done before, we thought that we might have a compelling case. And here we are 14 months later, preparing to make the transition next year.
There's no doubt the Tommies have been thoroughly dominant. Here's some of the scores from last season's football campaign. 69-3, 74-14, 51-6, 53-0. 63-15, 56-7. Some would say, well, yeah, you can't be competing at that level. But it's not like the Tommies went undefeated every single season. Mm-hmm. There was two losses last year as well. And it's not like every single year it's an undefeated campaign. So was there some sentiment within the university like, hey, we are losing games here. It is possible we can be beaten. Why are we getting kicked out for being too good?
Yeah, you know, I'd say for us, we really took a look at this as an institutional decision. And when you look at our institution relative to other institutions in the state, we're the second largest university in the state of Minnesota, the largest private school in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, for us, the decision to try to make this transition to Division I was about as much about institutional brand reach, recognition, and telling our story a little more broadly than local or regional boundaries than we've done traditionally. And so really an opportunity for us to extend our brand. And when you think about the Pioneer Football League, it's a coast-to-coast conference. It's the only coast-to-coast conference there is at the Division I level. And so we're really excited to be able to tell that story, to get into some of those markets and recruit a little bit differently than we've been able to do before. So that's, you know, we looked at it as an institutional decision, not necessarily from just a competitive perspective.
Phil Esten is the AD of St. Thomas, and he's talking about the Pioneer League, which has members from San Diego, University of San Diego, all the way to Marist, which is in the Hudson Valley of New York. So truly coast to coast. Now, it's a non-scholarship league, and you guys have been non-scholarship at Division III as well. So was that attractive to you to go to a league that had non-scholarship programs?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things were attractive to us from the Pioneer Football League perspective. One was certainly that transition we felt would be easier for us to make non-scholarship to non-scholarship. You know, there are only two conferences at the Division I level that compete in non-scholarship football. That's the Pioneer Football League and the Ivy League. And so it's good company to keep, in my opinion. And so, you know, that certainly was a transition that was attractive. Secondly, the schools in that conference do look a lot like the University of St. Thomas. Many of, almost all but one, are private institutions. You know, again, Dayton and Stetson and Marist and Valparaiso and Butler and Drake, San Diego and others. And so we felt like that was a good fit. And then, as I said before, the ability to get into the Southern California and New York and Florida and Charlotte market at Davidson and others, you know, all the way in between, was also really attractive to us. So there were several factors that really lined up. But I'd say most of all was just the alignment from an institutional perspective. Schools that do take football seriously but do it at a non-scholarship level in Division I FCS.
Now, doesn't seem like you're one to beat your chest or to pump your program up too much, but this is kind of a funny dynamic for the listeners. If you were to tell most people this is a program going from Division III to Division I, most listeners would say, oh, man, they're going to get pummeled for a while here. And yet,
sure,
there are coaches in the Pioneer League saying, no. We can't have St. Thomas come in. They're too good. Is this amazing to you to hear Division I coaches worried that maybe you're too good for them?
Well, you know, I think that's you know, some of that is just taking a look at the commitment that St. Thomas has had to excellence over the years, whether it's academic excellence or athletic excellence. You know, certainly our facilities already look a lot like the facilities across the Pioneer Football League. So we think that, you know, we'll have competitive facilities pretty quickly. And also, you know, a lot of the student athletes that we've got on our team right now have been recruited from a Division I perspective. Some FCS scholarship, some Pioneer Football League, and for whatever reason made the decision to come to the University of St. Thomas. So we already have a roster that some, not all, some could compete at the Division I level. And so, you know, my sense is that, you know, we're not going into this with our eyes closed at all. Our eyes are wide open. We've got a ways to go until we're competitive across the board in the Pioneer Football League. But I think if we do things right, we can get there. We can be competitive pretty quickly.
What I think is also interesting, you noted this, it's probably got a lot of people to say, wow, I didn't realize that the St. Thomas is the second biggest university in the state of Minnesota behind only University of Minnesota, the Golden Gophers. So with that in mind, are there plans within your school, both athletically and academically, to grow into a recognizable brand and to continue to grow enrollment? Or do you like being the size of the school that you're at?
Yeah, you know, I think the size of the school that we have right now, undergraduate enrollment of about 6,200, total enrollment with graduate students right around 10,000 is a pretty good size for us. We just added a College of Health, and so we may see enrollment grow a little bit. But, you know, interestingly, we were only one of six school or one of six states nationally to have only one or fewer Division One athletic programs in the state, yet we're the 22nd largest state in the country. We reside in the 15th largest media market in the country and metropolitan area in the country. And so, you know, I certainly believe that our community, our marketplace is ready to support a second Division One program. You know, the University of Minnesota certainly has a stronghold on the state, and they will. They've got a fantastic brand. But, you know, again, I mentioned this earlier, as we think about the future of the university and its trajectory, certainly is of interest to us to grow that brand recognition nationally, whether that's stabilizing enrollment in the future or the ability to slightly grow enrollment over time. But it's as much about stabilizing our university's enrollment and financial position over time as it is anything else.
Phil Esten joins us, athletic director at St. Thomas. Let's ask you the question about the here and the now. Every college football fan is wondering, what does college football look like this season? Mm-hmm. From where you sit, what does college football look like for you this season?
Sure. You know, our conference has taken the position that we are going to continue to assess what's happening with COVID and both local and national guidelines around testing protocols and making sure that we bring our student-athletes back in a safe way. And that's, of course, our very first priority, making sure that our student-athletes, the health and welfare of our student-athletes. I can tell you with the NCAA's guidelines around testing that were released late last week, I think it's going to be very difficult for a lot of football programs, particularly at the Division III level, maybe Division II level, I can't say for sure, to be able to afford to do that, you know. Testing certainly has some scarcity to it, and there's a cost to testing. And with the frequency and pace at which the NCAA has suggested we do test our student-athletes, and again, it's all for their health and welfare, it's going to be difficult for a lot of schools to afford that. And so I think we're getting close to a place where it's going to become really, really difficult for schools to compete in the fall. I think the good news is, the NCAA has been really flexible in looking at whether or not we can continue to practice and work out in the fall, giving us an opportunity to protect our student athletes. You know, one of the things that I worry about is if we had, you know, we've taken the spring off, didn't have spring football. If we take fall off, we really need to think about injury prevention as we roll into the spring next year. And even if we can move our season from the fall to the spring, we've got to do everything that we can to protect our student athletes from an injury perspective too. And so it's important to me that we find a way, even if it's pods or small groups or whatever, to continue to work out in the fall, despite whether we have a season or not. But I think it's becoming more and more difficult to envision a fall season, particularly at the Division III level.
I know you're short on time, so this could be a quick one, but are you open-minded to a spring football season?
Without a doubt. You know, for me, I want to make sure that our student athletes have an opportunity to compete this year. And you know, first and foremost, like I said before, their health and welfare. Would like to do it in the fall, but if for some reason we can't do it in the fall, you know, we'd certainly look to do that in the spring if we can. As we've discussed here, this is our last year at the Division III level, and we've been in this conference, the MIAC, for 100 years. And despite the fact that the circumstances are what they are, we'd really like to celebrate that century-long history with our colleagues in the conference. And we'd like to do it on the playing field if we can. And so if there's a way for us to compete in the spring, we certainly would take advantage of that.
Phil Esten is the AD at St. Thomas. They are making the jump from Division III to Division I. What a remarkable growth this should be, and what a really interesting college football and sports story in general to keep your eye on. Phil, this was really cool. Thanks so much. That's a great conversation. I appreciate the time today.
Thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Phil Esten, AD, St. Thomas in the St. Paul area of Minnesota. What an interesting story. And I love hearing AD say, absolutely without a shadow of a doubt, we are open for spring football if that's what it's going to take. I love hearing that. As I railed on the college power brokers last year, I always worry that there's not enough forward thinking, outside the box thinking when it comes to college football. It is so rooted in tradition and the way that it's always been. So to hear an AD say, without a doubt, I'm open to spring football if we can make that work, I love hearing that, because I think it takes creative outside-the-box thinking these days to find good solutions, and the fall might just not work for college football for a lot of those universities for the reasons that he kind of laid out there. Brad Heller has our headlines this morning. He is our headlines anchor and dessert coordinator. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, DA. This report sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if they could save you hundreds on your car insurance. The NFL and the Players Association have finally agreed on the COVID-19 testing protocols, as all rookies are now reporting to training camp today. Players will be tested every day for the first 2 weeks of camp. After that, if the positive test rate for players, coaches, and staff is below 5%, it'll move to every other day. Also, the NFL's now proposing no preseason games, something the players have been asking for all along. The NBA bubble is doing its job right now. 346 players tested in the last week and zero positive tests. LeBron James was asked what life has been like inside.
Feels like a big old AAU tournament for grown men. And, you take it and you enjoy it. And we get to do what we love to do. And that's play the game of basketball and be with our teammates and brothers. So, it's all good.
The seeding games are 10 days away. A week from Thursday, Lakers, Clippers, and Jazz Pelicans will be up first. Meanwhile, only two NHL players have tested positive since training camps opened a week ago. The teams will travel to the hub cities on Sunday. San Francisco Giants manager Gabe Kapler joined several of his players in taking a knee during the national anthem last night.
I told them that I wanted to amplify their voices, and I wanted to amplify the voice of the Black community and marginalized communities as well.
Kapler, courtesy of NBC Sports Bay Area, he's the first MLB manager to take a knee. He did not say how often he was going to kneel during the regular season. One other note from that Giants-A's exhibition game, Alyssa Nacken coached first base for the Giants, becoming the first woman to coach in an on-field capacity during a major league game. DA.
Thank you, Brad. Our phone number is 855-212-4227 or on Twitter, DA on CBS. We've got this date in Mothership history coming up here next. We go back 4 years and my take on Pokemon Go. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in Mothership history.
All right, so let's go back 4 years ago where I assessed the craze of Pokemon Go.
So I'm saying, what's the answer, though, when you're in rural America, you're just standing in a cornfield on the game. What do I do? What do I do here in the heartland of the country? How do I make my Pokemon strong?
Well, that's a great question, Trucker Ryan. How do you make your Pokemon Go game strong when you're in the middle of rural America? Here's your first piece of advice. Do not play the game while driving. Late last night in upstate New York, a driver playing Pokemon Go swerved off the road and hit a tree. The dude was 28 years old, trying to catch a Pokemon on his phone at around 11 p.m. Distracted by the game, he drove his car off the roadway, crashed into the tree. Luckily, not seriously injured, but his car crumpled in. In the wake of the crash, police are urging the public to use common sense when playing Pokemon Go. The police said, quote, "Don't play the game while driving a car or bike. Do not trespass on private property just to catch a Pokemon. Avoid staring at your phone and be aware of hazards like roadways, drop-offs, and waterways. Be cautious of who you share your location with and do not travel alone while playing Pokemon Go." To me, playing Pokemon Go is one of the most dangerous activities you could possibly do in today's day and age, so I might encourage you just not to do it. I don't know how addicting it is to go catch your Squirtles and your Pikachus, okay? I have no idea.
She's a bad girl, David.
But I know this. If you're driving, don't play. If you're in the middle of the woods, don't play. If you're near roadways, don't play. If you're near waters, bodies of water, don't play. If there's a girl to talk to within 10 miles, don't play. If you have anybody else to speak to hang out with, to do any activity with, don't play. I mean, strikes me, you might as well just not play. Remember the Pokemon Go craze of 4 summers ago? Where people were walking around like zombies and you saw them chasing Pikachus, invisible characters from Pokemon, and you're like, what are these people doing? That is your this date in Mothership history. Little reminder that the DA show has a game plan for success sponsored by Napa. Taking a look at the Houston Astros, their game plan for success this year's 60-game MLB sprint. Put the cheating scandal behind them. That's easier said than done. Dusty Baker and company could use it as a source of motivation, perhaps. Keep the rotation healthy. No Gerrit Cole, so that means Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke lead the charge. And get some production out of outfielder Kyle Tucker in the likely absence of Yordani Alvarez to start the season. Whether you stop by a locally owned Napa Auto Parts, Napa Auto Care, or Napa Online, if you need help with your ride, you can count on Napa know-how. That Pokemon Go thing was crazy, and it reminds me, Mraz, that New York City is one of the most dangerous places on earth if you're not paying attention. There is just something happening all of the time. It's either a cab, it's either an Uber, it could be a bus, it could be a cyclist. If you're on a subway platform, it's moving trains. There are so many things happening. Rush hour, you've got people stampeding towards you. You've got road closures because of construction. You've got Times Square. You've got Brooklyn Bridges. You've got parks. People are just everywhere all of the time. Not anymore. It's a dead zone now, but before pandemic. And to add on top of that Pokemon Go, when you watch somebody, and look, I'm certain I've been guilty of this as well, but when you're texting on the street or you're looking at something on the street, you're tweeting or you're looking at a story on the street and you're just walking, man, there is so much that could potentially go terribly awry for you. But then add on to it. So the activity of texting or being on your phone is you are locked into that as you do a secondary thing like walk to your car or walk to a subway or walk to a place where you're going to eat or walk somewhere. That's what you're doing. You're texting as you're walking or you're texting as you wait. So at the very least, there's a direction that you know you're supposed to be going as you do it. Not making it good, but it is what it is. With Pokemon Go, you're looking at your phone, but you're actively chasing things that aren't there.
Yes.
So imagine instead of walking to, you know, the diner to go get lunch or walking to work where you happen to know where it is, you're suddenly chasing a Squirtle in the middle of the street. You're looking at your phone and then you're chasing a Pikachu that just went inside a manhole cover. I mean, it's amazing we didn't have more deaths in New York City during the summer of Pokemon Go.
It was insane, D.A., so much so that there's an area by me on Long Island called Argyle Lake. It's not one of these big lakes. I don't know if it's saltwater, freshwater. We won't get into here nor there.
Definitely
and
fresh.
And they had to call police officers in during the height of Pokemon Go to secure that area because one doofus went to chase whatever you said, like a squirtle, whatever the heck that was, and ended up nearly drowning in the lake because he wasn't paying attention and just literally walked shoulder deep into the water, didn't know how to swim because he was trying to catch this thing. Could you imagine being so oblivious that you don't realize your sneakers, ankles, knees, like you keep getting deeper and deeper into this water to do that? They had to patrol the whole area, and it lasted at least a good month. And you would drive by and go, I can't believe that they don't have anything better to do than to walk around this stupid lake trying to catch things on their phone.
Yeah,
I had people leave there's a strip of bars over there. People would leave drinking and go, oh, we're going to go fetch some Pokemon. We'd be in the middle of beers. Like, where you go? What are you talking about? You're going to walk around. Well, I haven't been to the village in a while. There's different Pokemon here that I need to catch.
Oh, how humiliating to leave a social activity to go catch Pokemons.
How pathetic. How pathetic. And frankly, by the way, I think we were 4 years too early on that app because that would be the thing everybody would be doing just to get out and go for a walk while they were locked down. If Pokemon Go was a thing, you'd have way more people being active and just getting some fresh air and have their mind off the fact that they were locked inside.
It's so true.
We blew it 4 years.
Right now, Pokemon Go would be the most popular thing in New York City because it's like I Am Legend in New York City. There's grass growing in the middle of the streets right now. Will Smith is chasing down lions in the middle of Manhattan. Nothing's going on. Now you could actually safely play Pokemon Go in Manhattan.
I said the same to DA when I went in last Monday. I'm driving through the streets. I go, what happened to this place? It's not how I remember it. This is not what Manhattan used to be.
Tumbleweeds rolling across yes. 6th Avenue.
I'm there's gunning like, it through the yellow lights. There's nobody on the road.
There's like a coyote on top of the post office. Wow. Things really changed.
There today, broken too. Down cab on the sidewalk.
It is a Trash Tuesday, so send us your trashes. Jeff tweets, I'm trashing coffee in the morning. All I want to do is perk up for work. Instead, I'm running to the bathroom so that I don't have a Mraz oopsie situation. Hashtag America runs on dumping.
Hold your nose. That's some smelly rubbish.
Patrick tweets, I'm trashing Mraz for assuming everything on Earth is learned at a class, going back to his rooster not laying eggs knowledge. He must have missed that class where it's not socially acceptable to shave your body hair on the front lawn. Hashtag Chubbo.
Warning, hazardous material.
DA follow-up, big discussion last night, Danielle's cousin's birthday. 6 people there did not know. 5 people there did know. It was a big straw poll.
Oh, no. Yes. No. 6 yes. people didn't know that roosters didn't lay eggs?
5 people did know. My wife was one of the people that claimed she did know, but 6 people did not know, and it became a big hot topic. Where would you even learn that if you're not on a farm? It became a big discussion at this family gathering last night I was at.
Look, I don't want to discredit or criticize your family because, by and large, your family's been great to me.
No. This is Danielle's family, so have fun.
But your social circle is devastatingly stupid.
Fair.
How could there be 11 people and the majority didn't know that roosters don't lay eggs?
It was close to a 50-50 split, I'll give you that. But I'm telling you, it got heated. And the people that did know were very angry at those that didn't. And the ones that didn't were just kind of like, how would you even know that? Where did you even come across that info unless you've studied it?
Well, I mean, think about our poll that we had on Twitter and Facebook when we asked this question last week. And it was 95-5. So 5%. Said I didn't know. And that was an anonymous poll. These are people admitting openly that they don't know. So that's even scarier. An anonymous poll suggests that that would be a little bit more truthful. You're talking about 6 people wave their hand and say, yeah, I didn't know a rooster didn't lay eggs. That is terrifying.
But by one of the people that did know, he did ask me to pose this question. I'm going to wait for Bogdan. I'm going to pose it to you. Do you know the difference between a bull and a steer?
I would not know that.
Okay. They're both male cows. The right. difference is a steer has lost its package.
Oh, okay. So a bull can still procreate, but a steer
yes.
is neutered.
See?
Neutered. Okay, male cow. Okay, that's good.
So this show has led to family gatherings where we have more zoo conversations and learn things after understanding the rooster.
Patrick tweets, I'm trashing the outfielders in the Peter Schwartz home run video.
Oh, no.
They were playing right behind second base as it flies over their heads. Playing in normal position, they probably could have fielded it and thrown him out at first base. Hashtag stay. Hashtag stay, stay, stay.
That deserves a trash can emoji.
They're putting the shift on Jared Schwartz.
There has been multiple conversations that we've had behind the scenes on the Peter Schwartz home run videos. He has now posted one double into the gap that his son hit and one home run. Now, you're right about the double into the gap. You would think that if the outfielders were playing properly, there was a play at first base. Stay, stay, stay. But also in the home run that his son hit, and of course, because Schwartz keeps posting videos of his kids do everything, he's considering these sporting events. I'm wondering if they're playing inside a bubble at Levittown Little League. Okay.
Testing twice a week.
Now, I think there's a snitch hotline for the Little League of Levittown. Okay, make sure that these kids are safe.
You went to Miller's Ale House without a mask.
As Mraz pointed out, there was no infield that young Schwartz was running around after he hit his home run. And so I noticed that they were playing from third base, that basically third base was home plate. They were hitting to the outfield. That's not a real home run. Now, Cap, the magic fingers of Watch DA, feels like it was a legitimate home run. But, you know, the rest of us feel like there's shenanigans being played there, that that is not a proper home run. So now we've got Schwartz taking victory laps for his son hitting a Fugazi home run from third base. When will it end, Mraz? When will it end?
As Joey Waller, our friend, said, that kid's a young Pete Incaviglia, the way he's got power right now.
When we come back here on the show, are the bubbles the safest place on earth?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.